This is Luann Johnson, and it's the 1st of July, 1999, and I'm interviewing Geeta Doshi in her home in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Thank you for letting me come into your home today. Can you begin by telling me about your home country?
I was originally born and raised in India, and I came to this country with my husband as a new bride in
1969.
And I remember the specific date, and it was May the 19th, 1969, and that time we were getting ready to go to the moon, Apollo 11. That date is so significant in my mind. I came from Bombay, India, a big array of people, and I landed, and Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, and I landed in a small community in eastern Kentucky called Whitesburg, Letcher County. Population is 1800. As a new bride, no idea what I was doing in that strange place, but I remember it was July 20th, 1969, when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, and he said to the command center, "Eagle is landed." That picture has so clear, after probably what, 30 years, that I landed from a strange country to the, small county in Whitesburg, Kentucky.
And what brought you to Whitesburg from all the way from Bombay?
It's kind of a story. My husband, as soon as he graduated from medical school in Calcutta, India, he came for his residency program in United States. In this 1960, I don't know whether you remember, in those days we had a lot of shortage of physicians. American students didn't want to go into medicine, didn't want to practice. I think we were shortage of nurses and staff, especially in the science and engineering. So the United States started, recruiting the foreign physicians. And one of my husband's friend was going, and he mentioned to my husband, and my husband got all the information. And started, he called the first job as a residence. It was in a Baptist hospital in Nashville. They gave him a plane ticket. They, treated him very well. And he started his first year of internal medicine residency in a Baptist hospital in Nashville. He finished his 4 years, 2 years in Nashville, and he went to Memphis for his further residency. And after he finished his residency, he went to Edinburgh in Scotland to do his postgraduate study. And then he came back to India to get married. The time when he was here, he was on bachelor and a student visa. And as soon as we got married, he just realized that the way of practicing medicine is so different in India. And when he was leaving, he finished his residency. Let me go back. Finished his residency, and he had 4 months to spend time before he was accepted to Edinburgh in Scotland. And one of his friends says, "Well, what are you going to do for 4 months?" And my husband said, "Well, I sure need the money. I'm going to do the moonlight." And one of his friend told, "There is a position left in Letcher County in Whitesburg. They're looking for temporary physicians because it's a small community and they needed." So he went to Whitesburg, matter of fact, Harlan, Kentucky. It's a Daniel Boone clinic, and he stayed and practiced medicines or help in the clinic for 4 months. And the way my husband's, I'm not bragging about, but he's a wonderful physician and a great human being. And one of the founder of the clinic, a director liked my husband's work so much, and he says, "Navneet, if you ever want to come back to United States, please call me. I'll make you my partner in the clinic." But that word really stick in his mind. And as soon as he came to India, he was looking for a bride, and it's a long story, but we got married. And
would you mind telling me the story? How did he go about meeting you?
People has always, even my own children has asked me so many times, and they always, whenever I tell my engagement story, their eyes are open, wide mouth. How can you do that, Mom? Because I didn't fall in love before we got married. It was an arranged marriage. And people have a misconception about arranged marriage. What is arranged marriage? If you look at the history, and in a French or Italian or a British history, that used to be a matchmaker. You know, I read a lot of Barbara Cartland's romantic or novel English books, and you look at that, people are looking for a same, you know, family trait, same family value, and they try to matchmake it. And that's the way in India. It's really not a forced marriage or somebody's going to put you, but yes, I knew my husband's family, his mother, and I'm born in the same small community. So we knew his family, and he was a bachelor, and I was doing my last year's internship in a small hospital, and I was 26 years old, and my father says, Geeta, this is the time to get married. Do you have any friends or a boyfriend or any interest in your colleagues? You know, my father was very open-minded, and I said, no, daddy, I am not attached to anybody. And they said, well, then it's time to look for a groom. I said, sure. And at the same time, he came to the United States, from United States, and looking for a bride. And it's a kind of a little custom in a small community, like a country peddler or a daily news. They put a little picture of the bride or a groom who is looking for a, you know, bride or a groom. And my uncle in Bombay, India, looked at the picture and called my father in a small town he lived in, asked that, you know, this looks like a guy will be really good-looking guy, and I know the family will be good for Geeta. And my uncle called me, and my father called me, says, are you interested in it? And I said, oh, okay, I guess so. And here I am, you know. He came and talked to me like you and I talking. His mother came, and aunt and his father came in my uncle's house. And it's a kind of, make a long story short, I was working in the small hospital in OBGYN program, and I was the only resident there to deliver a baby. And there was one attending physician, and we had a time, was 3 o'clock for a tea time to meet the prospective bride and a groom. And I was running late. I had to catch a train from my hospital to the suburb of Bombay. And I didn't have a time to comb my hair, and I was really in a disarray. And as soon as my aunt saw me entering the house, she said, what in the world? You know, you're going to go like this to talk to the groom prospective? I said, I'm sorry, I didn't have a time. But anyhow, I just carried the tray of trays, you know, cookies and tea, and I just went and, you know, introduced myself, and we were just talking, casual talk. His mom was there, his mother, father, just, you know, and then his parents and my uncle and aunt sent us to the next room, drawing room, we call drawing room or living room, and then we sat down, and he was a very polite young gentleman that asked me very few questions. What is your future plan? What are you doing right now? And in a few basic, and we had a cup of tea, and that was the end of the story. And I thought, well, I didn't pay much attention, and I thought, well, that's fine. I liked him. He was a very mild mannered, because in the 60s, people in India, actually myself, you know, we all young generation in India had idea that United States, you know, a lot of influence about hippies, and so I thought, you know, long hairs and all those things you read and watch TV, and I had a really misidea about the American style, and he was very clean cut and a nice, polite young man, and I was pretty impressed. I went back to my workforce, you know, it was 6 to 7 weeks and I never did hear from him. And my parents said, well, he may not have liked you. You may have done something. I said, Mom, I have not done anything. I was not properly dressed because I was busy and I was tired. I didn't have enough sleep night after night. I'm working. After 7 weeks, one early morning, one of my head nurse calls me when I was in a delivery room. He says, there is a lady is on the phone. She wants to talk to you. And I said, just take a message. I cannot come out. And she took a message. It was his aunt calling. They wanted to come and see me again. And I called her back and I was not happy. I said, why you want to come? He said, well, just, we have a few questions to ask you. And I was a little annoyed. And I said, okay, sure, come on in. In the afternoon they came and his mother asked me, I still remember, do you believe in God? Do you know how to cook? If my son wants to go to United States, what are your feelings about? And I have no clue. I pretty much three questions. I may have lied every question, I guess so. I believed in God, definitely. I said, yes, that was the right question. Do you know how to cook? I said, yes, I know, I was lying. And that time there was another question that I remember. As a young teenager, I had a lot of acne on my face. And I had a little bit scar. And then I had glasses, and I didn't wear the glasses. And they suspected that I may have a poor vision. So they asked me, do you wear the glasses? I said, no, I don't wear spectacles, or we call glasses. There was a 2 out of 4 question. I lied 3, and it. And then his aunt asked me, do you like him? I said, I guess so, you know, without even giving it deeper thoughts. The next day, they called my parents and they announced the engagement for the, I think it was in May or April, May 1967. And we got married the 16th of July. 1967. We had a courtship for 2 months because he didn't have anything to do. He was so free because he came from United States. And I was so busy really closing my residency program. They knew that I'm getting married. But he will come in the hospital and wait on me. And whenever I have a time, we'll go out together. But you know, that's the time. If I wanted to break up the engagement, I could have done that. People have a misconception. There was no force on anybody's part. But it was a courtship that we started getting to know each other. And we started creating the feelings for each other. And that's a really hard conception in this country. When you are dating a young man or young woman, you want to do the best you could. You're really not going to show the true yourself in any country. You know, you're going to get along very well. You do whatever each other. But once the true marriage starts, that's the time, you know, disagreements and it starts. So I really think so. Either arranged marriage or a love marriage. It's a kind of a give and take thing. Marriage is a partnership to me. It's really a partnership. That's my engagement story.
That's wonderful. So what? How did it? The little lies that you told. What happened when they found out?
They suspected that this is a very common. That you know, most of the teenage, and I'm sure in 60s, 70s, most of the teenage wear the glasses. That time, contact lenses. It was not common. We used to have a hard contact lenses and I had a terrible allergy problem and I could not wear it. So I used to wear glasses all the time in my hospital work, but when they came to see me, I just took it off, you know, and they knew that. And I had acne and I, you know, they wanted to see my face clearly because my mother-in-law forgot to wear the glasses. She left the glasses at home and she couldn't see my face clearly. So they wanted to make sure that his son is getting a good bride, you know. And then my husband knew right away, you know. He said, well, I said, well, so what? You wear the glasses too, you know. Yes, that's the story.
It's interesting the things that they found important to ask you about.
Yes, you know, it's a funny thing that the whole family comes together. It's a kind of a marriage in India. You marrying a groom or a bride, you marrying the whole family, because family value is so important. Because you bringing a bride in your home, parents want to make sure that bride has a good value about the respect and treating, you know, with the love and kindness to the elderly. Because the marriage in India is like you marrying the whole family. This is the way, it's just the philosophy. And here, you marry the bride and a groom, family has, but I feel like, you know, family value and family history is very important. Which family you are getting married, because no matter whatever, you're going to have some kind of a genes or pulse. It comes from your grandfather, great-grandfather. So in India, marrying the family and their value and their family background is very important. They look at it, you know, where the family's roots are and their wealth and their health history. And, you know, and I think it's very important, like genetic factors, their illness history, family history. And we don't do it, but I think we in this country, we do indirectly, you know. We don't do directly specified, but naturally, when my daughter is bringing the boy at home with her, I'm going to be asking, you know, do you know his family? Aren't we all, you know, we want to do the best for our children. Mm-hmm. You know, in this country, we don't do directly, but we do indirectly, little research that what kind of a family my daughter is getting married.
So you said you came from the common background, you had a common...
Yeah, common background. His family, his mother is a very strict Jain religion. It's a Buddhism and Jainism. It's a kind of a branch in a Hindu philosophy, you know. And my family, my parents were kind of a mixture. We were very liberal in our religious belief, because I lived in a community with a lot of Muslim family, a lot of Muslims where I was born and raised. And I played with a different culture, Hindus, Muslims, Christians. So, you know, and my father was not an atheist, but he believed in Hindu, Muslim religions. And my mother came from a strict Jain family. But then, you know, the mixture of my grandmother and my mother, and mixture, it became not a strict religious belief, but believe in God and doing a prayers and worship. But his parents were very strict Jain. But still, we have a common values and background.
Yeah. So I'm somewhat familiar. Like India is a huge, huge country.
Huge country.
Country. It's huge. So the area, the region that you were in, that's not typical of all of India, having that kind of diversity.
I will say more than 15 dialects, different region. I'm coming from a western part of India called Gujarat, and we speak a Gujarati. Our dialect, main dialect, is Gujarati.
Can you spell that?
G-U-J-A-R-G-U-G-R-A-T-I. G as a George. And, you know, different dialects, different culture. If you go from a south to north, you will see a lot of, you know, within 400 miles, you will see a different culture, different customs. People in the south, you can see a lot of dark complexions. I'm sure you have come across the several, you know, pretty feature, but it's a dark skin, is like African American. So many have a dark because it's a sun's latitude with, you know, it's so hot there. And people are migrated. Originally, Indian people is migrated from Indo valleys, you know, in probably 6,000-7,000 years ago. migrated from Indo Valleys and then united with the probably Middle Eastern culture, Muslim culture, and some of them has gone to the south, southern India, some of the Indians, and has become a lot of crossbreeding has become a darker complex. And in the northern part of India, you see a lot of western and northern part, a lot of fair skin. You can see the difference in the, because I have a little hazel eye and a little lighter complexion, maybe it's a Middle Eastern blood in that, you know, because coming from the Indo Valleys is near the Middle East, in Eastern Iran and Iraq and that. And different dialect, different even food habits. Different, you know, you can taste the food from a northern India is a different taste of food, and then the southern India.
Very different.
Yeah.
Are the social, I know somewhat about social caste systems in India. Is that
in a way,
you were growing up too?
Yeah, in a way it's called caste, means, you know, it's a lot of misconception about caste. Look at here also. You know, you want your children to, when your children growing up, you want them to play with the same background and cultural background, you know. Like here in this country also, aren't we all indirectly a caste system? We, you know, African American, Jewish community or white Americans, we try to stay in our own group in a way. And in India, what happens that there was a four caste, they're called Brahmin. Those the called Pandit, they are the one do more of a religious ceremony, spiritual work. There was a called Kshatriya, means they are the warrior. They're the one fight for the country. And there was a merchant called they do the business people. And the last one called the laborer, you know, they do all the menial work. This is the way it become, that's the reason people say a caste. Caste is really what your great-great-grandparents or traits for. If I'm born in a business family, you know, I am people try to stay in the same. They want their sons or daughter marry in the same caste. They don't want to go to the lower caste called laborer. They're in a Brahmin family, they are more of a religious. They do the prayers and they do all the religious ceremony. They wanted to stay in their own caste in a way, yes. But I look at it in a different way. People has a lot of misconception about Indian culture, Hindu philosophy. But aren't we all human beings try to stay with our own level indirectly, you know. I want to stay in a pretty area. I don't want to go in a northern part of this town or something, because I want to stay with my own kind of a people. Aren't we all as a human being, we do, you know, indirectly try to stay in our own caste. Do you agree with me?
I see how that works out the way.
Yeah, it was really in a long, long time ago, India, when there was, you know, Indian culture was coming up. They have divided in actually four groups: merchant, laborer, warrior, and spiritual leader. That's the reason, really, the caste has formed. But then, you know, all that more and more we get has become a lot of misconception about the caste. But I look at it in that way.
In which caste was your family?
I was born in a business, you know. But my great grandfather was in those days before the British came, India was ruled by emperor and king, and my great grandfather was the treasurer in the small kingdom. So I up to this day, when I go and visit my mother, she lives the same house. It's been given to my great grandfather by the king. This is a huge house, probably I would say 20-21 rooms, that was given to him as a gift to, because he was the treasurer in a small kingdom. So I pretty much we call in between the warrior and the business, because he handled the treasury. And I have my grandmother used to tell, they used to have a
small, you know, king will come and you will have an open court and my great grandfather will collect the tax from the people. And that room is still there the way it was done. You know, we have put the little swing in that room. But then my great grandmother used to tell me all the story that my husband has sit in that as a small child, you know, with his father. When the people came for at the end of the year to give the tax to the king.
So you mentioned that you had higher education. What level of education did you finish?
I actually in India I can practice family. You know, I'm a family physician in India. And as soon as I was finishing my last year of residency, when I married, and I tell you the truth, that was a lie to my husband's family. And me, I really didn't have I wanted to stay in India, and because I was in Bombay, and all my friends were, you know, getting ready to open their own dispensary. We call dispensary or clinic. I wanted to stay in India and practice medicine, and. I didn't have any clue that I will end up in the United States and being a housewife and not work, but yes, I still keep my license in India. What happened that as soon as I came here, I was almost 27 years old, wanted to start the family, and my husband landed a job in a small community in Harlan or Whitesburg, Kentucky, and you know, if we go and I have, you know, if I want to get a license, I have to do my residency here for 4 years. We had a choice. We didn't have money, so I have to stay with him. And I wanted to have a baby, and the doctor has asked me in OBGYN, says whether you want to conceive, then you got to stay with your husband. Otherwise, you know, you can't. And I gave a lot of thoughts and decided not to take a license and try to raise the family. Yes, pure regrets. Definitely, if I had to do all over again, I will definitely take my license and practice medicine. But when you are young and have no clue, no guidance, and he was so busy in his own practice, and he's a wonderful man, he said, Gita, why do you have to work? You know, enjoy the life. And so I know I never did, you know, I worked as a physician's assistant in Whitesburg for 2-3 years before my oldest daughter was born, and went back and worked for probably 1 year again. And now, as soon as my second daughter was born, I decided to stay home. I wanted to be a good mother and raise my children by me rather than with a, you know, babysitter. That was the sole purpose. I stopped working and then we came to Bowling Green in 74, you know, and never did. And then my son was born. But I just, my children asked me, especially both my daughter, you know, when they were teenage, and they will get angry with me and they will say, Mom, what did you do all day today, you know? And so many times I wonder. Now they understand that Mom stayed home and gave us a good education. But that was a purpose, and yes, few regrets, definitely. If I have to do all over again, I will probably could have called my mother-in-law or my mother to stay with the children and would have done it. But when you are young and have no clue what direction your life is going, you know. So I'm very supportive of my own daughters. They are both the physicians, and I tell both of them that, you know, when you start practicing medicine, and if you need me, once you start raising your family, I promise you, I will be there. Because I never want them to discontinue practicing medicine. Because once you stop doing it, it's very difficult to go back. And then, you know, I just never had desire to, you know, take my license. And it's been almost past 30 years.
So that value, that it sounds like education and career is important. Is that a tradition or a value that you were raised with from your mother's mother?
It's a very progressive, positive changes. I can tell you, my grandmother, it is so strange, like my grandmother didn't see my grandfather and was married to him because his parents told him to, told her to do that, you know. Then my mother and father saw each other and got married, but I don't think so there was any say yes or no to, you know. And then the my time came, yes, I had to, I can say yes, I want to marry the gentleman or I don't, there was. And now my daughter, this is a fourth generation, I'm telling my daughter brought the young guy home. I said, Mom, this is the guy I want to marry. See how, you know, how much the progressions in that, that marriage system has changed too. Because there is no way I'm going to tell my daughter in this country, because she is born and brought up in this American custom. I sure like to have an Indian gentleman as my son-in-law, you know, and there is nothing wrong that all they are very bright and young, handsome Indian guys available, but my daughters, you know, wants to fall in love and date some young American guy, that's fine with me. You know, the changes are hard, but it's in the long run. It's okay, because I can see my great-grandmother didn't have anything. We didn't see the bride's, you know, her husband's face until the night, you know, the first wedding night. And my daughter brings the boyfriend home and says, Mom, I want to marry this gentleman. Yes, I have to accept that, you know, that's the reality of the life. And one thing, the value, that's one thing that I tell my children, no matter you are born and brought up in this country, you are an American, but I strongly believe in roots, our heritage, you know. Never forget that you are a product of Indian family. You should be very proud of your Indian culture, because, you know, family value and a character is the most important to me. I think this country is really missing the principle and the values. What is a character? Character is made up of principles and values, and we are lacking in a character.
What were some of the things you tried to do to help maintain that sense when you're raising your children?
It's very difficult when you are, you know, sending your children to the school and a peer pressure, and it's very difficult, you know, maybe continuously nagging and telling them who you are. You know, my daughter came one time, I remember exactly, that she was maybe 4 or 5, my oldest daughter, 4 or 5 years old, and summertime, you know, I used to take them in a swimming pool, and she is a little darker skin than most of my two children, and she, beautiful feature, long hair, and 4 or 5 years old, and was swimming and become the dark skin. And we used to go to the First Baptist Church in downtown, and the one young boy in the Sunday school said, was telling that, oh, you are a black girl, you know, why you are in our church? And the poor, my oldest daughter didn't have any clue. She comes home and starts crying. That little boy told me that I'm black, Mom. Am I black? I said, no, honey, you are not black, you know. But why that boy was telling me, and I said, I'm not going for swimming anymore because my skin has become very dark. And that the kind of bothered me, that I wanted to give her a sense of pride. Now, how do you do with a 4-year-old child? And that's a very, you know, very touchy subject for the people coming from a different value, different culture, different skin color. And I remember I had, you know, she was carrying the Bible, and I went in her room upstairs and got the Bible. And she used to carry Jesus' little portrait. And I said, let's go, Nita, look at it. Now, what color Jesus has? Jesus doesn't have a white skin. He has a beautiful brown hair, brown eyes, and beautiful skin like you. See, Jesus is not white, Jesus is not black, Jesus has a perfect skin like you. That tells you that God loves you. Jesus has given you the same skin color and eye color that what he has it. And you know, that's the best I can do. And that incident is so strong in my mind. I don't know whether my daughter remembers, she's 27 years old today, but you know, and you think about it. You want to give your, is it?
Yeah, I'm going to flip it over. Side B. I'm speaking with Gita Doshi. And you were talking about raising your children with a sense of who they were, or who their people were.
Yeah, character. I wanted to give them something and a value and a principle and moral. Who you are, where are you coming from, where is your roots. It's difficult, and I hope and pray God up to this day that I hope I have given them some sense of confidence, or no matter, you know, you may have a little darker complexion, or you may look a little different than the most of the Americans, but you are an American, you know, you are born and brought up here, this is your country. India to them is a foreign country. To me, India is my motherland. I was born and brought up there for, you know, at least up to 25 years. I know it's so strange. I will spend more of my lifetime in this country, my adopted country, than I have spent the time in. You know, India is strange to me too. I love the country, but, you know, I have a more connection with my adopted country because I'm an American too. You know, I may look different, I may sound a little different, but I am an American. You know? And then you create a bond between, because this is my adopted country. But still, I keep my head high, and, you know, up to this day, and I want to do the little much better job with my grandchildren. The various, you know, one of these days that maybe fourth or fifth generation will have a darker skin or dark hair and dark brown eyes, you know, and they suddenly the thoughts will come to their mind, who am I? Why am I have a little, you know, not blue eye, blonde hair, why am I have a darker skin? Or they may have a question, say, your great-great-grandmother was born and raised in India. This is the sense of identity, you know, that we have to give it to our children. Because in this country, the sense of character is, we are losing it. Look at the first half century, like Thomas Jefferson's, you know, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King. Look at the character. They were the bedrock of their, you know, their power, what do you call it? They were the, you know, you can remember that character. You don't see in even government today, not a, you know, strong character, strong moral and strong value to who you are and what you want to achieve it. That gives you really direction of the life. And I have tried, and I hope and pray, you know, God's grace, children doing very good in education. My main thing was focus on education. Because if you have education, you can achieve anything, you know. And sometimes you have to fight for the good education. Because there is a, you know, you talk about it. I don't see directly discriminations in a small community. But, you know, discrimination is a part of everyday life. You have to face it, you know. You don't see it in a negative way, but yes, it is always there. And especially Indians are, because most of the Indian students are good students, hard-working students. And, you know, so many times you see in a college admissions, so many times in a job situations, and that's the thing I tell my children, that, you know, if you face it, you have to, you know, you have to learn to live with it. Because, you know, you're going to, on your life, sometimes it happens in a job market. Or my son called me 3 days ago, his mom is so political here, you know, because he's applying for early admission to the medical school in George Washington, and the topic came, he said, Mom, it's really not fair. I have a much better grade than some of the students who's applying with me. And what is the problem? I said, honey, there is always going to be affirmative actions or whatever you call discriminations, because they have so many Indians and foreign students applying for the early decision. Out of 20, there are 15 are the, you know, Chinese, Indians, Pakistanis, maybe five white American, you know, and they have to have some kind of a boundary. He said, Mom, that's not fair. And I said, honey, that is a life. You have to learn to live with it. And that's very difficult. You know, you want to give them a positive aspect of a life or motivations, but you don't want them to give a false sense of idea that no, you can, you know, you can do anything, but you have to work a little harder. You know, I hope I'm not coming like a negative towards this, but that's the everyday of life. You face it.
Mm. Now, you moved here then, when you moved and you found yourself in a small community in Kentucky, what were some of your first impressions?
Because, you know, I came from I remember we landed in the New York airport, and then my husband had probably $10 in his pocket, because, you know, when he came back to India, he didn't need a dollar because currency is so different, and he had $300-$400 left in a bank in Harlan, Kentucky, and we bought the two tickets. He had enough money to buy the two tickets from New York bus terminal to the Harlan, Kentucky. We took a Greyhound bus. We have around about 27 hours of journey. I was wearing my saris, and you know, and I remember that we took a Swiss airline, and we our journey from Bombay to Zurich, Switzerland, and there was month of May, and it was so cold, you know, because I'm not accustomed to the cold weather. In India, it was 90 degrees, and in Zurich, when we landed, it was so cold, and we spent 2 days to. My husband wanted to spend 2-3 days, and. But I said, I got to have a coat. I remember that coat, that month of May when I landed in Harlan. I was still wearing that blue coat with my long hair, and I was wearing saris. And the people in a small community, they knew that the Indian doctor is coming with his young bride. And first time I went to the grocery store was A&P, you know. People were like, especially the small children, thought that what alien landed on the on the earth, or you know, they will look at me, and I was a little bit shy and intimidated too, and you know, because I didn't have I had some skirts and blouse, and in India girls wear all those things. But after the marriage, people, you know, when you go for outing, you can wear slacks or skirts or blouse, but in the house. I was wearing a sari, and it didn't bother me. But here I came, and you know, it was difficult. Long hair and beautiful, different color saris. But probably they got used to me, and I got used to them. And slowly, I, you know, started changing. I have a few dresses, and then I became pregnant with my oldest daughter. And I had a blood clot, and I had to go to the hospital for 6 weeks, or I was in. Then, you know, I just throw my sari away, and I started, you know, wearing the slacks and dresses. Mm-hmm. It's been almost, you know, 27 years, and I hardly wear my saris anymore. Once in a while, Indian function, I'll wear it.
What about, how did you find, you know, you said you lied and said you knew how to cook. Did you learn how to cook then?
Yes, I started learning. You know, my mother is a very good cook, and so does my mother-in-law was a good cook. And you know, when you are a student and used to live in a dorm, and you know, when you go for the holidays, you are so tired. Your parents, I remember my mother will always say, "Gita, you know how you should learn how to cook." And my father will say, "Leave her alone. She just come for a few days. Let her enjoy the life." And why, you know, you just don't pay much attention. But I knew the way of cooking. I never took the responsibility to do. But my husband and I stayed in India for 2 years after marriage, because that time he was on a student visa, and the laws was that you cannot come back. You have to stay in your original country for 2 years before you come back to the United States. So I think President Lyndon Johnson changed that law, and we came. But we both stayed in a small community suburb of Calcutta and started our practice. We practiced for 2 years there. I was doing strictly for a female, you know, medicine, and then he was working with her. So we worked in the same office, and you know, I had to cook, and my mother-in-law was very helpful. But slowly, with the trial and error, has learned a lot. And my mother came here around about 10 years ago in this house. And I had a house done because my mother had impression that I'm a tomboy, I have no idea, no sense of decorations, no sense of responsibility, because I was the oldest child and very studious in my study. And I really wanted to excel myself in an academic area. I didn't have any interest in being a housewife or being professionally, academically I wanted to do. And my mother thought, you know, Geeta can never handle, but looking first, she entered this house and she was so shocked and surprised that, you know, I have become good decorator and I can cook very well. And, you know, she said, I can't believe it. How did you do it? I said, well, it's just a responsibility, you know. It gives you some kind of a strength. But, you know, I cook pretty well today.
Was it a challenge when you moved to Kentucky then, cooking the way you had learned to cook?
Yeah, it was a challenge. First time I remember, so many memories coming back to my mind because, you know, my husband has not given me a clear-cut picture because we were practicing until the last day because we didn't want to tell our patient that we are moving back to United States because we had a huge practice and, you know, we never did have a honest conversation with each other. We were just trying to close up our practice, and anyhow, the hospital has given us a small two-bedroom apartment, and I was expecting the next day somebody will come and clean my apartment, and I have no idea. And my husband, I says, you know, when is the maid will be here? He says, what maid? I says, honey, clean, you know, make beds and vacuum or do the laundry. He says, honey, you are the maid, you are the cook, and you are the queen of this apartment. And I was shocked and surprised. I have no clue that I had to make my own bed, because in India, labor is so cheap. I will get up from my bed, and I never made bed, because we have a, you know, we call servants, but our housemaid will come in the morning. In my home, when I was growing up in my mother's house, I had a lady came to start working with my great-grandfather when she was 9 years old, and she died at age of 73. She raised my grandfather, she raised my father, she raised me, she has seen my own son. So I was a fourth generation. She was a house nanny. She will get up in the morning. My mother never fixed us a breakfast. She will get up, my mother will get up at 8:30 or 9, and we will be all gone by the school that time. Nanny will get up, dress us up, give us a breakfast. So I didn't have a sense how to cook or clean, and it was definitely a shock to me to do the housework, do the laundry, you know. Cooking was not a problem, but then washing the pots and pans and cleaning the dishes, up to this day I don't like it.
And, that's a pretty big adjustment then.
Very big adjustment, you know. Labor is so cheap in India. Here is so expensive, you know, and people, but in a way I like that privacy, you know. You live in India, now I go back home and servants or housemaid, they are all around you. You don't have any privacy, you know. It's just too much commotion to me. I want everybody to clean the house and go away, and I like the kind of a peace and quiet. In India you don't get that, because, you know, that even up to this day, I take my children, and, you know, they have to take a bath at 9 o'clock because sometimes the waters, you know, they will cut off the water by 11. They have to, you know, servants is here to do the laundry by 11. Mom, do we have to take a shower? You know, it's a kind of a, India is ruled by British and a lot of British customs. Mm-hmm. We take a bath in the morning before we go to the breakfast table, and a lot of English customs that we go in afternoon tea. We, you know, children will wash their face and then they get gathered, you know, children will have a milk and cookies and ladies will have a tea time. But it's a little English influence on that. And my children didn't like that. Every time they go, do I have to do that, Grandma? I tell my mom, please leave them alone. They won't know. They're not going to be happy.
How often did you visit India?
I went 3 years ago. My nephew's wedding. I really like to go next year. Going to India for 2 weeks is not feasible. You have to spend at least a month, and it's so difficult. But I'm planning. Every time I call my mother in aging stage, she's 79 years old, and she always makes me feel guilty. Gita, you should come this year. I will not be here next year. I always tell Mom, you've been telling me for the last 25 years, Always tells me. My sister is in India right now, and hopefully I like to go next year and visit my mom.
Has she come over a lot?
No, she has come only one time, and I've been telling her, it's so difficult for elderly because, they don't speak our language, English language. They have, and it's so lonely here. And the other regrets, if I would have been in a bigger city, you see a lot of Indian elderly, parents, they come, and stay with their children. That would be good, even for my own children. One thing I wish I would have done it a little differently, when we were looking for a job, from Eastern Kentucky, we came to Bowling Green. Yes, one of my regrets, the raising the children, I wish I would have gone to a bigger city. Then I could have given them a little more sense of Indian culture. Bigger population. We were the first Indian in 1974. We came to Bowling Green, and my children has never seen any Indian festival like Holi or Diwali or any kind of a Indian musical program, and it's very difficult for them. And I can understand, my children said, Mom, how many times we have gone to Indian function. How do you expect us to? And I can understand that, because my husband was so busy practicing medicine, and we had to go to Nashville. Now there's a lot of Indian family in Nashville now.
What about in Bowling Green? Are there any other?
We have a 17, 18 Indian family. Lots of owns the motel. Mm-hmm. There are a few good Indian physicians in this community. Yeah, we get together occasionally, Indian holidays or even American holidays, but in a bigger city is different. You see a lot of your own, Indian boys and girls go for dating. There's a lot of camaraderie in between. And I wish I would have done that. In hindsight, I think about it, that when you are young, you have no idea. I was following my husband wherever he does, he's fine with me, but if I have to do again.
Why did he decide on Bowling Green?
That's a good story too. My husband and Dr. Bill Russell, he's in internal medicine with the Grace Gilbert Clinic. They did the residency together in a Baptist hospital in Nashville. And my husband knew him. And when I was, we were in Whitesburg, we were going to for a conference in Nashville and go to the Grand Ole Opry in 1973, I think so. And my husband said, I want to go and visit an old friend in Bowling Green, and then he wants to see you too, because we're married. He said, Dr. Russell will always call my husband and say, I want to see your lovely bride, just come on down here. And Bowling Green was on our way to go to Nashville, that's why we stopped in there one evening, and we met Dr. Russell and his wife, Anna Russell, and we had a wonderful time. And that time the Grace Gilbert Clinic, where the two physicians were leaving internal medicine department, was losing the two physicians at the same time. And they are, Mrs. Russell and Dr. Russell asked us, and I jumped to the chance. I said, sure, we love to, come here, because my daughter's one, my oldest one was 4 years old. My youngest daughter was around about 2 years old, and small community. I was getting kind of tired because they didn't have a kindergarten, they didn't have a nursery for children. And I wanted to get out and give them some educations, or look more to the bigger city. And we have looked at few towns in Ohio, but somehow you know, Dr. Russell says we love to have you at the grad school, Bakshini. And, you know, we came for interview in May 1974 and accepted the positions and came to October 1974.
How did you find Bowling Green?
Coming from Whitesburg, Kentucky, I thought I was in heaven in Bowling Green. Bowling Green seems to me so big, because, and I was very happy. We lived in Eastland Park in 1923 Harvey Street, next to the Greenview Hospital. And we bought the 4-bedroom house, and I joined the garden club and a woman's club, and I knew pretty much that I didn't want to work for a while until the girls are grown, you know, got a little older and goes to school. But I absolutely fall in love with Bowling Green. I felt like coming from a small community, staying 4 years in Whitesburg.
Did you have that kind of social activity when you were in Whitesburg?
No, we had a couple of, one Filipino family was there. There was a one Indian family. No, we used to go to Lexington, Kentucky for some of the, you know, holidays or functions. But no, my husband was the only internal medicine doctor in that community with around about 15 to 16 general practitioner, like family physician. So he was the mainly consultant in that, and was very busy. Mm-hmm. It was a mine community, a lot of coal mine. It was a wonderful practice, but really tell you that the people were loving and caring. They have really wanted us to stay there, begged us to stay. We will give you a free land, you can build your home here, you don't need to move. It was very, very tough decisions for us to move, because good money, good community, but I really wanted to give my girls education wise.
So what was your first house like here in Bowling Green?
Bowling Green, it was wonderful, and you know, up to this day, if I tell we tell this kind of a story too, because I am a good storyteller. Any time of even Americans or Indian we get together, I tell all kind of a story about my marriage and my, you know, coming to America, and even in my own department. Geeta, I would love to see, you know, can you tell that story again? But anyhow, we bought that house, and it was $47,800, and we told our friends that we bought that house for a cash. In this country, nobody pays the house for a cash payment. We have saved that cash money, and my husband didn't believe in buying, getting the loan from government, because in India, you know, that we are born and brought up with no credit card. If you have a money, you pay for it or you don't buy it. This is the way my husband and I were brought up in that. And somehow that value stays in your mind. But it was a stupid decision, I think, so that to pay $47,000 in a cash. Even our real estate agent was surprised. But our first house, 4-bedroom, pretty house, you know. And we paid that total cash, and we bought the first house. And it was a good memory. Both the girls, we stayed in that house for around about 74 to 80, around about 6 years in that house. And I started building. My son was born in 79. Started building this house in around about 1980, because we needed extra bedroom. Because my father-in-law, my mother came, we needed extra bedroom for my in-laws or my parents when somebody comes from India. So we started building this. And today, when I bought this lot, it was 17,000. Right now, this lot can be probably a little over 50,000.
So you designed this house, you planned this the way you wanted it?
Pretty much so. I have a few regrets, you know, who doesn't have regrets in a life? You know, anytime you build a house or anything, I wish I would have done something differently. But yes, I wanted something that roomy and nice and airy, and wanted to do some kind of a touch of Indian. If you look at in this house,
I was just gonna ask
you. Every little piece, I have a few little knick-knack here and there that, like this elephant I bought for in a garden region, Louisville, last year. But and like this table art, it gives me some kind of a pride. Okay. Who am I? Where I'm coming from?
I was just wondering, is there what kind of thought did you put into when you're actually setting up the house of like using use of space? Where, are there differences from when you were growing up in India and or and how have you taken
India,
that background and used it?
India is smaller because I grew up in a huge, probably. House, you call it, you call the mansion, you can call it, because it was a huge house, and so does my husband. He grew up in a big house, and the rooms and the carpets and the, you know, simple furniture, but the beautiful silk carpet and tall open window, because we don't have a lavalors and all, everything is open. In those days when this house was built, we didn't have a heating and cooling system. You know, everything is a ceiling fan. So I wanted ceiling fan, you can see in every room, because I grew up in a ceiling fan, because in India it's so hot, and we don't have air conditioners. Now, you know, we have a, some houses is coming up in a Bombay or some apartments, that's with that. But most of them open. In winter, summertime, you open the window, you let the ceiling fan run. So I just, some of them I wanted open and airy. And my rooms are much bigger than most of the homes. Upstairs bedroom also have designed a little bit because I grew up in a huge home, big rooms. You know, that I think that stays with you somehow, you know.
So how have you found Bowling Green as a home? What kind of things, if you could change things, what kind of things would you do you miss? Or would you want different?
What I would have. It means raising the family or working.
Give it a...
I wish we would have, you know, my girls went to the private school in Anchor Christian School up to the, you know, elementary educations. I don't know. I wish I can change some of the education system in India. It's in here. It's just children are getting academic educations, but the sense of value and moral and those the things I really like to, you know, instill in the today's students. Not on my own. I try to give as much as value to my, because I don't believe in drinking and smoking and certain values, you know. And the most of the Indian, when I was growing up in Indian culture in a community, and I'm sure here too, your great-grandmother, your grandparents didn't believe the dating or sex before the marriage, and those that some of the values I have tried and continuously putting in the, my children's mind that, honey, you're not supposed to do that, you know. Such and such does it, that's fine, but we don't do those in this family. No bad languages. I never heard my, you know, I remember one time my son was angry and used the word, and I was completely shocked because we don't use that kind of language in this home. And, you know, and we try that. I occasionally, when the social functions, I'll probably take a half a glass of wine or something, but my husband is strictly, he has never touched the wine or alcohol, pretty much vegetarian. My husband is strict vegetarian. I devil a little chicken here and there. It doesn't bother me because it's not a religious belief, because people believe that if you are Hindu, Hindu don't eat meat. But yes, some of the Hindu believe eat meat, you know. Why we don't eat beef? Because cow is a sacred in India. And if you look at that, because in those days, you know, India is a agriculture country, and the cow was a very useful animal. Gives the milk, gives the nourishing of the life. Cow dung is a fertilizer. And in this philosophy, Indian doesn't believe in killing the cow, but some of the things being, you know, telling that my children eats meat, we have never made any hard and strict rule for eating the meat. If you want to eat, it's fine, but it's, you know, excessive meat product is not good for you. For the now, they are both the girls are physicians, naturally, you know, they know the more the science and health hazard. That's why they don't eat much meat. They hardly eat meat. They eat mainly the white meat, chicken or turkey. But because now they grow up and they are in a science field. But we have never, but yes, I still tell up to even my son-in-law, my daughter, you know, social drinking is fine, a glass of wine is fine, but you don't want to make a daily habit.
So you were raised Hindu and Jainist?
Jain religion, yeah, is a mixture.
Mm-hmm. And how have you found a kind of a spiritual community here?
Spiritual, yeah, because, you know, I started, that's the one thing I wanted to do, because I strongly believe in God, superpower, you know. And I wanted to give some kind of a religious belief to my children. And it's very difficult in a small community. I don't have a temple. And my husband's belief and mine is little different, but still in it, you know. And I sent my girls to the Christian school. And, you know, that's the reason we have become, you know, this household has become a kind of a world religion, because my girls went to, my daughter was baptized in a Methodist church, my oldest one. My youngest son was baptized in the Eastwood Baptist Church, in a Baptist. And the girls went, and my son even went to the Christian school. So I, you know, and my son goes to the Eastwood Baptist Church all the time, and he believes in Christian religion, and my daughter married a Catholic guy. So it's this household has become a mixture of all the religion, but my true, you know, I don't believe in a particular religion, but I believe in a human love and kindness and understanding for a fellow man. I may not be worship the Jesus or Rama or Krishna. Trust me, I'm not an atheist. But I believe in Supreme God. There is only one God, no matter which religion you believe in, whether Hindu or Christian or Muslims. Like you going to the Barnes and Nobles, you can take a Lover's Lane road or you can take the bypass. You're going to go to the Barnes and Nobles. Mm-hmm. There is one destination you want to go. That's the way we all human beings want to go to the heaven or do the good deed on this earth. It doesn't matter whether you are a Christian or Hindu. So I think I'm very liberal in that thinking. My husband is a little different. His strict, you know, philosophy is a Jain philosophy of the life. And I take a little mixture of every religion and adapt the middle ground. Because I go to the church, you know, not regularly, but, you know, I have sang in the Christmas. And we do, we go to the lot of, you know, and it doesn't bother me.
Are there any Hindu or Jain celebrations throughout the year that you observed in your family?
In my family here, not in this household. You know, we will go to the general function, like Diwali function comes usually in November.
What is that?
Diwali, D E W L W A L I. Diwali, you know, like a festival of light.
Festival of light?
Mm-hmm. Festival of lights.
And what is its significance?
It's a kind of a, you know, it's a it was a birth of a Krishna. They're celebrating the birth of a son of a god. And you know, spiritual way. It actually is the end of the year and renewal your spirit or renewal your growth. It's the end of the year actually. It's the, our new year starts from after the Diwali.
And what time of year is it?
Usually falls in November, you know, first or second week of November it falls before our Christmas holidays, because I went to the Indian school system.